Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by one of our newest worship associates, Becky Klein, our music director, Hal Walker, and several musicians in the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Peace Choir and the Peace Pipers. I'd like to invite you to read the words for the chalice lighting with me this morning. They're in your hymnal, number 434. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other.
Mystery, by its very nature, involves experiencing uncertainty. But we are a society that does not tolerate, let alone embrace, and certainly does not celebrate uncertainty. We want answers. We want to know. Rachel Naomi Remen, a pioneer in integrative medicine, introduces us to mystery with a capital M. And she says, "The first time I heard the word mystery with a capital M, I didn't get it. As an addicted reader of mystery stories, I had the idea that a mystery is something that you solve. Something is a mystery if you haven't found the answer yet. This is mystery with a small M. I had never heard of mystery with a capital M. When mystery has a capital M, it is something which by its very nature cannot be solved, can never be known or understood. And so, in its absolute unknowableness, it presents us with a living experience of the sacred." She says, "The experience of mystery strengthens us, changes us, and awakens us. One of mystery's greatest gifts is hope." Mystery is common, but we often don't see mystery when it's right in front of us. Recovering our sense of mystery may allow us to reclaim our power. There is a great deal to wonder about in life. Come, let us worship as we discover, explore, and maybe even celebrate mystery with a capital M.
The story I have to share with you this morning is one that you know something about, so I'm going to need your help in telling it in a few moments. It's a story by Marianne Moore, and she has this whole collection of stories about children playing games with God. It's called Hide and Seek with God. And lots of the stories start with the children playing hide and seek with God. Well, this one day, after the children played, they said to one another, "It's so fun to play hide and seek with God, and we always find God in these interesting places and different shapes and sizes and colors, but we never get to see God all at once." So they went to God and they said, "We want to play a different game, and this time we want to see you all at once, all of you at one time." And God said, "Well, that's going to be kind of difficult. Even I don't know all of me all at once, but let me think about it." So then God said, "Okay, I've got an idea. We're going to play hide and seek again, but this time when you find me, you are going to be able to see all of me all at once." So he told the children to cover their eyes and count to 10, and then God went to hide. When the children uncovered their eyes and went to look, usually they went to look all on their own to see who could find God first, but this time they went together because nobody wanted to miss what they would find. So they set off as a group together, and they looked and they looked and they looked in all the usual places, but they couldn't find God until they saw this box, and it was wrapped up beautifully. It looked like a present, and they wondered, could this be God? So they picked up the box and they unwrapped it together. And inside, they saw what looked like a puzzle with all of these puzzle pieces. And they wondered, could this be God? So they began putting the puzzle pieces together. And they heard God talking to them as they did. And God said, what do you see in these pieces? So what do you think? This is the part of the story you know something about. What do you think the children saw when they began to put the puzzle pieces together. I'll tell you, the first piece that they pulled up was a picture of a thunderstorm. And that was an edge piece, so that helped them. And the next piece they picked up was of a garden. And that was also an edge piece, so they had a good start. What other pieces do you think they found as they began to put that puzzle together? The sky.
Ocean.
The ocean.
Mountains.
Each
other.
They found each other.
Family.
They found family. Did you have an idea?
No.
Who else has ideas about what they found on those puzzle pieces?
Space.
They found space.
Stars.
Stars.
Animals.
Animals.
Snowflakes.
Snowflakes.
I thought God didn't have any ears.
That's why this is a story. What else did they find?
Feelings.
They found feelings.
Sadness.
They found sadness.
Hope.
They found hope.
They found there were pieces missing.
Larry is on to something. He said they found there were pieces missing. So here's what happened. Larry read this story. They put all the pieces they could find in, and in addition to all the pieces you mentioned, they were in that puzzle. See, I told you knew something about this story. They also found pictures of people helping one another and people teaching one another. They found all kinds of pictures of people. But when they got to the end, there were a few pieces left, and they were blank. But they fit into the puzzle. There were a whole bunch of these blank pieces that fit into the puzzle. There was nothing on them. And the children said to God, "You said we would be able to see all of you all at once." And God said to the children, "You see many, many pieces of me in this puzzle." And he named many of the things that you had named. And then she said, "In addition to all of those pieces that you see, those blank pieces are where my mystery is. And even I don't know all of my wonders and surprises." And that is what we will be pondering this morning as you leave for your classes. Those mystery pieces of God, of life, of this universe. To lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, some words from the Jewish prayer book used in many Reform synagogues, Gates of Prayer. Days pass, and the years vanish, and we walk sightless among miracles. Lord, fill our eyes with seeing and our minds with knowing. Let there be moments when your presence, like lightning, illumines the darkness in which we walk. Help us to see wherever we gaze that the bush burns unconsumed. And we, clay touched by God, will reach out for holiness and exclaim in wonder, "How filled with awe is this place, and we did not know it." And now, surrounded by the sounds of our community, we'll keep silence for a few moments together. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. This morning, we're so glad that Barb Broverone is back with us. She's so grateful, she and her husband John, for this caring community John has been in the hospital for quite some time, and Barb thanks you for your love and support. He's getting better and looking forward to returning to church. Our continued prayers for health and healing. And will you hold in your hearts this morning Diana Hultgren, Hydrin Hultgren's daughter. Hydrin was a member of this congregation for many years before she died. Her daughter is being ordained today as a Unitarian Universalist minister after many, many years of study and preparation. Hydrin was looking forward to this day for a long time and was supposed to light the chalice at the service. So Diana is thinking of us as we think of her and send our love and best wishes for her ministry. For all of these names that you hold in your hearts and that we have heard spoken aloud, we give our grateful thanks. Will you join me now in the spirit of prayer? Just this breath. Just this one. And now another. This is the gift that sustains my life. Just this breath. And now another. This is the gift that sustains all our lives. Who knows where it comes from? This wind, this breath of life. We didn't create it. We can't control it. But we can receive it. Just this breath. And then another. We can receive it and notice it for the precious gift that it is. Who knows where it comes from? None of us can say, but together we can praise. So grateful for this blessing of life. Amen.
ever heard of mystery with a capital M. Rachel Naomi Remen says that mystery with a capital M involves a question that can be answered, like a murder mystery. But mystery with with a small m involves that. But mystery with a capital M raises questions that have no answers. Mystery with a capital M fills us with wonder and sometimes with awe. There's a bit of mystery going on here today, and I don't know if you noticed it, but how did I get here? How does someone who purchases the sermon topic at the service auction end up giving the sermon? Believe me, I've wondered about that also. This is actually mystery with a small m, because the answer is pretty simple. I volunteered to be today's worship associate, but then there's the mystery about a new worship associate giving the sermon. That should give you pause. It did me. But that too turns out to be mystery with a small m. Reverend Melissa offered me the opportunity to tell my story, the story behind today's topic. Mystery solved. But mystery with a capital M is behind my presence here today. This is my story. A little background. First, this story starts with me as a skeptic. I had long ago lost touch with organized religion. I embraced spirituality, but didn't have a clue what to do with it. I described myself as spiritual, but not religious. Second, I like to take photographs, but I never found time to get serious about that. And often, after taking them, when I look at them, I not only remember taking them, looking at them takes me to the physical and emotional space where I was. This is Pike's Peak, taken on the grounds of the Air Force Academy in July of 1996, on the day that my nephew first reported to West Point. My heart was with him. I was proud of him and deeply afraid for him. On to the story. I moved to Ohio on July 31st, 2009, and a few months later, I was diagnosed with advanced stage colon cancer. I had surgery in December, and in January began a grueling course of chemo. I was told that the worst side effect would be significant fatigue. That didn't sound so bad. Eventually, I met a support team member named Sally Weil, who said she was there to help patients with making meaning in their lives. And I said, so what is your role? And she said, I'm the chaplain, and this is what I did internally. Her title is actually spiritual care coordinator, but I associated her with traditional religion. And one day she came in and she gave me a poem, Wild Geese. I liked the poem a lot, but I'd never heard of Mary Oliver, and I was pretty cautious with Sally. As I progressed through chemo, my side effects became harder to manage. My skin literally burned off of my hands and feet. Neuropathy in my hands made it hard for me to use my computer. I had difficulty eating and drinking. Cold drinks made my throat spasm in a way that felt like swallowing broken glass minus the cuts. I began to have nausea. They changed my anti-nausea medication. Soon after, in early April, I became very sick. The significant fatigue became debilitating. I could barely climb the steps to go to bed at night. My vision was impaired, so I would turn the TV on to something like The Golden Girls, something funny without the visuals. And I remember one night thinking I should change the channel, and it took me more than an hour to sit up and move and pick up the remote control. My oncology team said I should rest. Rest wouldn't make me feel better, wouldn't help the fatigue, but I should rest. And they were right. It didn't help. Somehow I managed to go to office hours, actually lying on the floor in my office much of the time, and taught my graduate seminar once a week. By early May, I was spending about 95% of my time on my back. My chemo was suspended. I began to realize that if nothing changed, I was going to die. I began planning my memorial service in my head, going over the details again and again so as not to forget them, and I finally forced myself up to write them down. On May 4th, unable to eat or drink and far past fatigue, I didn't know how to help myself. That afternoon, in what felt like a last-ditch effort before being hospitalized, I forced myself to walk. I had no reason to believe walking was going to help. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I walked 2,800 steps, not at one time, 100 here, 100 there. The next day, I pushed myself to walk 6,000, a couple hundred at a time. The third day, I walked 8,000 steps. And by the fourth day, I thought maybe I was getting better. Obviously, I was. After 3 weeks completely off chemo, I was back on. With some adjustments to my drugs, I completed the 12 rounds, and by the end, with the drugs jacked up again, I was pretty fatigued, but able to function. My last chemo session was on Thursday, July 29th. That day, I saw Sally Weil, and we had begun having real conversations when I had told her that I had thought that I was going to die. The next day, I received a photocopy from her in the mail of a blurb about an interview with Krista Tippett of On Being with Rachel Naomi Remen. It was to be broadcast at 7 a.m. on Sunday. I had no idea who Remen was. It kind of looked intriguing, and I set it aside. On Saturday afternoon, after 46 hours on my take-home chemo pump, I detached my chemo for the last time. I got up that day pretty excited about chemo being over and thought that I would be making many celebratory phone calls that day. Later, when I completed detaching the chemo pump, I found myself in tears. I had not cried about the cancer. I had not cried about the surgery or the chemo or even being horribly sick and believing I was going to die. But when it was over, I was overcome with emotion. I made no calls. Deep in thought, I remembered the Rachel Naomi Remen interview, and I thought, I bet I can find that on the internet, and so I did. And I listened to it, and then I listened to it again. And then I listened to the longer, unedited version, and by the time I was done, I was emotionally drained and physically exhausted. I spoke to no one that day. It was my first encounter with Rachel Naomi Remen and my introduction to the language of mystery, the kind with a capital M. Now, the real mystery in this story began the next day, Sunday. My niece and her family had invited me to meet them in Columbus to go to the zoo. Preparing for the trip, I pulled out my camera, and I realized I needed to make some space on my memory card because I was going to want to take pictures of the kids. And I took a quick look and as I was downloading and inexplicably focused on this one, taken in my backyard. I thoughtlessly glanced down and saw that it was taken on May 4th at 7:22 p.m. I thought, this is not possible. I couldn't remember taking this photo any time, and I certainly could not have taken it on May 4th. When I struggled to walk 2,800 steps. And then I remembered my niece's visit in February. It had been her daughter Grace's 8th birthday. And with only minor side effects from my first chemo, I had a party for her, and of course I took photos. I was sure that the camera's calendar was set incorrectly, and so the mystery with a small M was about to be solved. I searched for the photos that I knew were taken on February 6th. They were dated February 6th. I was stunned. The photos of my backyard were taken on May 4th. I wondered how. I didn't know. I wondered if I took them thinking they might be my last photos. What and who in me took photos when I thought I was dying and could barely force myself to walk? I don't know. I had just heard about mystery with a capital M the day before, and now I was experiencing it for the first time while equipped with language to talk about it. That was the first Sunday in August of 2010. Over the next few days, I began reading Remen, and then voraciously, a library of previously unknown authors, they gave me something to do with spirituality, and I began meditating. A deep, unnameable yearning had opened up in me, and I was paying attention to it. Fast forward exactly 4 years into my journey, and many mysteries later, I had begun to look for a faith community. Now, my criteria were really stringent. I wanted a church where I could stand to listen to the service. In a community that was serious about social justice. It was the first Sunday in August of 2014. I had arrived via a serpentine journey at the UU of Kent for the first time. It was the fourth church in 4 weeks. At the first church, I inadvertently sat in someone else's seat and she let me know about it. The service felt just too traditional. At the second church, they put name tags on the visitors, but not on the regulars. The service was okay, and I thought I could go back. The third church, whose website assured readers that they need not worry about sitting in someone else's seat because they rearranged the chairs every couple of weeks, was about to be closed. I visited another church's office where I asked what the church does related to social justice, and the representative looked appalled and said, "We don't do that. We don't do anything political. We welcome everyone." Now, I had been avoiding coming to churches in Kent. I worked in Kent, and I didn't want those paths to cross. I was running out of options, so reluctantly I went online to explore a couple churches in Kent, and the UU Sunday service was titled Spiritual But Not Religious. Ding. By then, I had had nearly 4 years of experience with mystery with a capital M and had learned to pay attention. Spiritual but not religious? That's me, I thought. Maybe I'm supposed to go there. So I arrive at the church and ultimately encounter what feel like multiple mysteries. Someone greets me, encourages me to make a name tag, and says everyone wears one. Nice. I'm handed an order of service, and on it is this photo. Ding. Nothing much touches my soul like snow-capped mountains. Nice. A young adult recognizes that I am visiting. She sits with me. We have a warm and normal conversation, and I feel genuinely welcome. Nice. I tell her I came early and had begun listening to a podcast of a previous service in my car, and she suggested that I listen to the service on poetry. The minister is wonderful, welcoming in a way that reflects openness, is articulate, intelligent, sensitive, and clearly gifted. The service is deeply meaningful. Never mind, can I stand it? In it, the minister who has just returned from an immigration reform rally in Washington, D.C., makes the point, why shouldn't we, the church, be political, given our UU values, echoing deep concern for social justice? Ding. By the way, she wanted me to cut that part about the minister, but, you know, whose sermon is this anyway? I began to feel like the guy on the roof in the flood. The one who's been warned by the radio about the flood and ignores it, and who has been visited by local officials asking him to evacuate, yet he ignores them. Who was offered a place on the boat but sends it away. The difference is, I am paying attention. I notice those little things in my mind. I go home, open the podcast from Poetry Sunday, and Reverend Melissa reads a poem. Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. And I think maybe, just maybe, I have come home. For me, this is a story about mystery, multiple mysteries with a capital M. For me, having cancer came to be a mystery with a capital M, not the disease whose questions science and medicine address, but the ongoing transformative journey it sparked. I still have a long way to go. In preparing for this service, Reverend Melissa asked me, what difference does it make to have mystery in your life? Naming mystery and thereby making it easier to notice and attend to has enriched my life in ways for which words are inadequate. I see the world and my place in it with new eyes that make me far more open to possibility, which really is the great uncertainty. Mystery casts light on tangible paths and critical relationships that have encouraged me to attend to, nurture, and grow the social, emotional, and spiritual dimensions of my life. Mystery sharpened my focus on core values that in turn informed major life decisions. In case you wondered, I have more questions, not fewer. But I'm more comfortable with not knowing their answers. I have found opportunities, maybe even gifts, in the physical and social adversity I have survived. I have found it safer to hope in my everyday life. Mystery brought me here, to this place, to this community, to this day. What might recognizing and attending mystery do for you? I don't know. Rachel Naomi Remen says, I think that mystery is a reminder to keep listening, to pay attention, to stay alive. Mystery has great power. I have seen mystery comfort people when nothing else can comfort them and offer hope when nothing else offers hope. I have watched people in their confrontation with the unknown recover awe, wonder, joy, and aliveness. They have remembered that life is holy, and they have reminded me as well. May it be so.
When you hang out with little children, you get to spend a lot of time with questions. You'll know the answers to many of the questions you are asked, like, where do peaches grow? Other questions you'll find you have to look up. For example, I did not know the answer to the question, what is this animal? I learned yesterday that it is a tapir. It lives in jungles and forested areas of South and Central America and Southeast Asia, and it eats fruits, berries, and leaves. So much of our lives are asking questions and learning the answers. Of course, there are some questions like, what causes Alzheimer's disease, to which we do not yet have answers. Scientists devote their lives to important unanswered questions like that, and history tells us that with sustained effort and exhaustive research, many important questions can and will likely eventually be answered, often with dramatic benefits for human life. And then there are questions that can never be finally answered. Questions like, where do we come from? And what happens after we die? And who is God? You may form your own answers for your own satisfaction or to teach a child something important about what it means to be human, but there is not and can never be conclusive answers upon which everyone agrees. These are questions that are shrouded in mystery with a capital M. Sometimes we get glimpses into mystery. Mary Oliver has another poem, which I think tells a story about this. It's called The Whistler. All of a sudden, she began to whistle. By all of a sudden, I mean that for more than 30 years, she had not whistled. At first, I wondered, who is in the house? What stranger? I was upstairs reading, and she was downstairs. As from the throat of a wild, cheerful bird, not caught, but visiting, the sounds warbled and slid and doubled back and larked and soared. Finally, I said, is that you? Is that you whistling? Yes, she said. I used to whistle a long time ago. Now I see I still can. And cadence after cadence, she strolled through the house, whistling. I know her so well, I think. I thought. Elbow and ankle, mood and desire, anguish and frolic, anger too, and the devotions. And for all that, Do we even begin to know each other? Who is this I've been living with for 30 years? This clear, dark, lovely whistler. This poem tells us another version of the story we heard earlier in the service. In every soul, there's mystery. How else can you understand the whistler? Or the man I know who, after a lifetime as a high-powered business executive, upon his retirement at age 65, decided with no hint that it was coming that he would make a serious study of landscape painting, and did so for the next decade. Or the woman who, overwhelmed with fatigue and believing she was dying, found the will to take a photograph of her backyard in the early evening light. All of these are hints, glimpses of mystery. Rachel Naomi Remen says that everyone has in them the dimension of the unknown, which means that life is open to possibility at all times. I have to acknowledge that mystery and the possibilities that it opens are not always beautiful. Mystery can evoke fear and trembling as powerfully as it can wonder and rejoicing. And the psalmist testifies to this in many of the psalms, often in the very same psalm. I need to acknowledge that there's a shadow side to mystery, even as I affirm that today's service is a call to celebration and to wonderment. Rachel Naomi Remen says that if service is the work of the soul and meaning is the language of the soul, mystery is the presence of the soul. Mystery is the way we encounter and experience the soul in the world around us. We have encounters with the soul of the world all the time. We often don't know what such encounters mean. Dwelling with the questions can open us up to wonder, and in that wondering, we might just discover something we didn't already know that turns out to be deep, powerful, incredibly important, and maybe even essential for us to know about what it means to be human in this world. Amen. This is a beautiful community made up of beautiful people, and here we are the ones who make all of our ministries happen. We're supported by no one else but ourselves. And in that support, we create something not only for ourselves, but for all the seekers who check us out on a website or come walking in the doors for the first time, nervous, uncertain, eager to find something that might just turn out to be incredibly important. We receive fragments of insight, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. Go in peace.